Hey, everybody, welcome to The Barbell Strikes Back. I'm your host again, James McDermott, and today I am joined with Keith Wittenstein. Keith is a CrossFit Level 4 coach and a member of the CrossFit Seminar staff. Many in the community know him as Coach Panda, and it's possible if you've taken your Level 1 with him, you know that very well. He's a former affiliate owner, and he's been a part of the CrossFit community for well over a decade. Keith, how are we doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me. This is
fun. Great to see you again. You know, I've only seen you at the seminars, really. That's typically when we bump paths, or at regionals back in the day when it was happening out here in Albany.
Sure.
How are you doing on this whole lockdown thing?
The whole parking lot of dreams. I miss those days.
Yeah. Yeah. The parking lot of dreams. Were you up here in Albany when we had the sectionals?
Yes, I was judging for that.
And, cool. What was that like back then?
It was hot. It was fun. I remember having to, everyone getting together and moving your pull-up rig around from one side of the gym to the other. There were some great moments in that parking lot, like people going ham on rowers, people pushing those sleds and, like, getting caught on stuff and, like, not being able to move them. There was Rob Orlando, like, clean and jerking 300 pounds for reps. Like,
which was huge back then.
Huge. It was savagery. It was awesome.
Now it's like commonplace. Like, oh, they're repping out 300 pounds. No problem.
Yeah. That was in the early days when, like, peeing on a box during box jumps was unusual, but it still happened.
You know? For anyone wondering what we're talking about, back in the early days of CrossFit, before the regionals, the first sectionals took place in the Albany CrossFit parking lot, which is a pretty cool piece of our gym's history. And Keith was there, so you're a part of our history. Look at that. You've done several level ones at the gym. You've done other seminars at the gym.
Yeah.
It's great to see you. So, Keith.
So it's great to talk with you. Like, you know, you're an acclaimed author of, you know, weightlifting coach. So,
I try.
Yeah.
it's just about just pretty much you just got to hang around for a while. Like, if you hang around for several years, cool stuff will happen to you.
That's the secret to my success as well.
Just being around.
Yeah.
But let's dive into more of the secret of your success. Let's talk about the Keith Coach Panda origin story.
Right.
The superhero that you are. So how did you start CrossFit, and what were those early days like for you?
Well, it's great because there was a time before there was affiliates, you went online and you saw CrossFit.com, and it was weird because, like, I'd heard about CrossFit through jiu-jitsu. I remember BJ Penn was one of those early CrossFit guys, and he was a jiu-jitsu superstar and MMA superstar, and I'd seen him, like, hold up a CrossFit shirt or something after one of his fights, I had to check this stuff out. And I went on the website, looked around. I was like, I don't know what any of these exercises are or workouts are. But I, started lurking on the website and reading, Coach Glassman's articles and downloading CrossFit Journal stuff and thinking, this guy is making a lot of sense. And I should look into figuring out how to do this stuff. And this is, New York in the early 2000s, and there was no affiliates. There was a handful of affiliates, like in the States, CrossFit North and CrossFit East down in Florida.
But I like how they were just named out of the regions, like North, South, East, West.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, they thought they'd maybe have like five affiliates, that would be a big deal. So they, couldn't find any affiliates, and, I'd go on the message boards and read stuff, and I'd try some of the workouts on my own and realize I was terrible at all these things and, certainly not motivated to keep going once they got like terrible and I felt ill. So I was like, I realized like, I'm going to need some people to work out with and help motivate me.
When that pukey feeling started to come.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, try to find someone, to coach me or something. But what ended up happening was I started organizing some workouts in the park for any like people in New York that were also lurking on the message boards and interested in CrossFit. And so we started doing these little workouts in the park, and we'd have some people who had actually been doing some CrossFit and or heard about it and saw the message on the message boards. And they started showing up, and we started having these little monthly and then weekly workouts in the in Central Park. And then it got cold out, and then we started looking for gyms that would let us go and throw their equipment around. And once they saw what we would do, they would throw us immediately out of the gym, and we'd have to go find another gym. And we kind of like bounced around like that for a couple of years. And then we finally...
Would they throw you out because it's kind of like a Planet Fitness type of situation? You guys are making a lot of noise. You're grunting, sweating all over the place.
It was mostly the noise and the grunting and the high velocity movements of swinging dumbbells over our heads, trying to hip on their cable crossover machines, trying to like set the treadmill as fast as it would go and then jump on, start running full speed for a quarter mile and then jump off and leave it running while we did like, you know, something else and then jump back on to get another 400 meters on it.
So you had quite a few lunk alarms sounded on you then.
Yeah. This is like mostly like little private, like personal training type gyms and little bodybuilding studios that were, you know, we couldn't get like all of us into a Crunch or a New York Sports Club. This is like, but there was like some buildings that have little private, you know, gyms, you know, that were, you know, catered to like bodybuilding crowds, and they would see us and just get very scared and throw us out of there.
It's amazing that like, if you're rolling in like 10 to 15 deep, it's amazing none of those gyms were like, hey, this is an opportunity. Like, I should know these people and help them out.
Well, the landscape of fitness was really different back in like 2004 or whatever this, I think it was about 2003 or four. Like just nobody was working out like that. It was strictly, you know, bodybuilding, you know, mentality, you know, the super slow was like a big thing. Like people just, you know, grinding away super slow on really light weights, you know, going for
all
size.
Machines, recumbent bikes.
Yeah, exactly. All that stuff. And there was, you know, group fitness classes were like aerobic classes and stuff like that. So like if you, and you know, we finally found like a Thai boxing gym that would let us, that had like a little workout area. And one of the coaches at the Thai boxing gym was like a kettlebell trainer, and he kind of was hip to like that stuff. Like every once in a while you find somebody who is like kind of hip to, you know, functional movements and kettlebells and some of the sort of what was then underground type fitness stuff. And we attract some of those people along the way. And then after like we basically amassed sort of like a little posse of about 15, 20 people that were showing up, you know, my buddy Josh was like, oh, okay, I'm going to go ahead and affiliate us. And he started a little blog and put the little CrossFit logo on there and paid the affiliation fee, which was $500 at the time. And we were affiliated.
Going to make a lot of people jealous with that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so we had the blog. We didn't even have a space. We were working out of this like Thai boxing gym for a little bit. And then that was pretty good for a while. Then we rented a space like on the fourth floor of like a little office building. And we proceeded to slowly develop there. And then as soon as we were making enough noise, they kicked us out of there.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't imagine the fourth floor would have went over very well, dropping bumpers and other things. What was the name of the gym or your affiliate?
CrossFit NYC. So okay. It was the first affiliate in New York. Right, I think we were the 17th affiliate worldwide. And but like this is pre-Rogue too, so we couldn't even like just order all the equipment for a gym. Not that we even had any money. So we just like rolled up on this like 1200 square foot little office space with tile floors, and we just walked in there and brought like dumbbells from home, kettlebells from home. I had a set of rings that we would like, we didn't even have a place to hook the rings up. We were basically strapped things over the door. So it was very much modeled like Corona, you know, quarantine fitness.
Like, yeah. It's like you're probably very used to this.
Yeah, this is very much like just taking me back to my roots. So yeah, we just worked out of there. It was like sit-ups, push-ups, burpees, squats, like body weight stuff, and you know, maybe sort of a kettlebell. And then one of our buddies was like a salesperson at Gold's Gym. And he was like, yo, they're selling, they're throwing out a bunch of mats. Like, I'm going to go, you know, you know, rent a U-Haul, and he shoved like a bunch of mats that they were throwing away from Gold's Gym in the back of the U-Haul and brought it over. And then we had like 2x2 tiles covering half the floor. And then I think we ordered some other mats, and then we got the rest of the floor covered in rubber. And then we saved up enough money. We were, you know, now starting to charge memberships, and we were getting people to come in. And we saved up enough money to order like four barbells and like a couple sets of bumpers. So we had that. And then I remember we were going away for the weekend. We were closing the gym down. A bunch of us were going to, Pittsburgh for a level one. So I'd already done my level one, but they were doing a one in Pittsburgh, which was relatively close. So a bunch of people signed up for the gym, and I was going to go again. And we were all going to go. And so we all planned this big trip to Pittsburgh. And during that time, we basically shut the gym down. I had a buddy of mine who I like gave him money to go build boxes. I printed out a bunch of like schematics for like boxes and platforms. So he built us two platforms and like a half a dozen boxes, like 20 and 24 inch boxes. And he basically just locked himself in the gym from like Friday to Sunday, ordering pizza and beer.
Just like grind it away.
Yeah, and he's like, you know, everybody in New York's like a theater guy, so he was like a theater guy, so he had like built stage sets and stuff like that, so he was like, oh, this is great. And, you know, he was like, he had to carry all the wood up like four flights of stairs and stuff to do it, but it was awesome.
Yeah, so we came back. He's using that fitness that you guys are working on.
Yeah, exactly. So we came back to have like, you know, some more gear in the gym, and it just grew like that, very organically, you know, piece by piece we would start adding to the gym. But once we had more equipment, we started having more people, and we started making more noise, and they were like, okay, you got to go.
I find that interesting that a bunch of people I've talked to from that era of CrossFit, everyone says the same thing, that they used to go to the level one often. Like if it was in the area, you would just go and sign up and do it again. And I don't know, is that still a common, is that a practice that people do these days, going to level one times?
Or? Required to re-up every 5 years, you do your level one. And they're trying to push people to level up. So go level one, level two, and take your level three and do CEUs. But I think back then, I mean, running into a group of CrossFitters was not happening, right? Like, yeah. If you saw a CrossFit shirt in, like, the airport or down the street, you'd be like, whoa! And you'd, like, run up and, you know, become fast friends with anybody else wearing a CrossFit shirt. So it's not like today where you go to a class and there's, you know, 20 other people and there's another gym down the street. I mean, so like when I went to my, you know, first level one, it was like, I'm in a room with like 60 other CrossFitters and like, you know, these heavy hitters, you know, that I've seen on the internet and like, and just other, just all these like fitness, you know, people and coaches and all this cool stuff. I'm like, this is amazing. And then like, you know, you go back to, you know, small town New York, you know, which is, you know, obviously a huge city, but like in terms of CrossFitters, it was like, you know, we were like the Amish. There was like very few of us and far between. Like, so, you know, we hang out there, you know, in our little enclave, you know, and then it was like, oh, there's another thing. Let's, you know, let's go there. We bring everybody we can to the level one.
Who was at your level one? Like, was Glassman there, Pat Sherwood?
Yeah. It was Glassman, Nicole, Andy Sakamoto, I think Dave was at one or two of them. He was definitely in a couple that I was at. My first level one was Coach Glassman, Annie, Nicole, everybody from like the early days, like Rob Wolf, Andy Petranek, all these cool people. And my first level one was before they had the specialty seminars.
Yeah.
So it was a 3-day seminar, and they had all of the people who run the specialty seminars, who eventually broke off and ran the specialty seminars, they were all there doing like little like 1-hour segments.
Like Bergner.
Yeah. Rip. So Bergner had like a 1-hour segment in the parking lot with PVC pipe. It was him and his daughter, and I think Amy Anaya or somebody else. And they were all like putting us through snatch, you know, the Bergner snatch warm up with PVC pipe. And Mark Ripito was there doing a lecture on the deadlift. Coach Mark Rutherford Ruttman, he was there, did a dumbbell demonstration in the parking lot right before we did a dumbbell workout. Who else? Just John Hackelman, the guy who used to train with was it Randy Couture? Like, you know, he had the pit, cross pit. He was like doing striking stuff, so he had us like shadow boxing in the parking lot. All kinds of like, you know, cool, fun people were there. It was super awesome.
So it was just a big melting pot of all these different communities coming together to essentially build up CrossFit.
Yeah, I mean, it was like you know, Coachella for fitness. It was just like, it was a super, you know, fun weekend of just all that crazy stuff. You know, and all the people you see back in the early days when like you'd only see CrossFit videos on CrossFit.com, there was only like 5 or 6, you know, people that they would feature in the videos, but like,
yeah, and some of the people you named that were at the seminar, like Annie and Nicole, you know, like people listening may not realize, but when you do the workout, Annie, you know, 50, 40, 30, 20, 10, double unders and ab mass sit-ups, that's named after her, correct?
As far as I know, yeah.
Yeah, like a lot of those classic girl workouts are named after people from the actual community back early in the day.
Yeah. So it was super fun back then. Like, and yeah, and you'd come back multiple times. And then if you were a repeat, you know, participant, they would kind of drag you to sort of assistant coach and help out since you've already been through it.
So that's kind of how you got more involved in the coaching. When did the Coach Panda moniker start? And this is another thing that back in the day, I feel like nicknames were way more prevalent. Like even when I got into CrossFit in 2011, you know, they gave me a nickname right away when I came to the gym. And there were so many different people back then who had nicknames. It doesn't really seem like a thing that's done anymore, you know, but how did Coach Panda start?
That's funny. So the Coach Panda thing is actually started. I left NYC, like around 2000, end of 2007, like beginning of 2008. And then, was looking around for another space, found another space in Brooklyn, opened up CrossFit Virtuosity. So that's around 2009. And that's when like, you know, a lot of stuff started happening. CrossFit started getting much bigger and bigger, right? You know, we started the Reebok partnership in like 2010. So all of that started getting, coming to fruition and things started getting bigger. But basically I was just like, cause once I had my own gym, I you know, was, you know, both stressed out and, you know, just, I you know, some coaches have a little bit of a temper. I'm one of those coaches. And so like every once in a while, I'd like go into a little fit of rage and like throw a bumper plate across the gym or, you know, smash something, you know, like a PVC pipe to bits.
It's probably because I've only ever seen you at the seminars, so I've never seen the fits of rage side of you.
Right. But yeah, when you're kind of, you know, trying to run the gym day to day over like months and years, like, you know, things build up and you get a little stressed. And that would often, you know, let itself out by me, like, you know, breaking a piece of equipment or something or smashing something or, so yeah, so like when that would happen, like there's a funny little video on YouTube about these little panda commercials called Never Say No to Panda. And like the panda just kind of like goes nuts and like smashes a computer or like knocks a TV shopping cart over. So like I would have one of these little fits of rage and then the next day like everyone would start posting like those little panda videos on my Facebook. Like, oh, Keith had a little bit of panda rage. Like,
nice.
Like, so that
I'm gonna have to look that like, up on YouTube.
Yeah, so I became synonymous with that little that pissed off panda that would like smash like things and just break things. So then it just kind of turned into Coach Panda, and that was that stuck.
and that was the rest is history, as they say.
Yeah.
So what?
Yeah. And I think my temper has calmed down quite a bit since then.
Yeah.
But, you know,
well, that's probably a good thing.
Yeah, I think it's directly related to gym ownership, which is something I'm not doing anymore. So
what made you decide to sell your affiliate? Is CrossFit NYC still a thing? Someone else took it over?
Yeah, so I sold one of our first members, it was actually a private client of mine. who I was training, a guy named Harry, and he took over my shares of CrossFit NYC, and he's the main shareholder and owner at this moment. But like, you know, the quarantine being what it is, he might be forced out of business. Like, because yeah, rents are extraordinarily high in New York.
Yeah.
And they have a lot of space and a lot of overhead, and like they have a whole, you know, clientele that they can't serve right now. I mean, I know they're trying with like the online classes and all that, but it still takes a lot of members to, you know, front the bills for, they have two stories, they have two floors in New York, and then in their downtown location, they have a basement uptown.
It's a harsh reality that we're all dealing with right now as coaches and gym owners. And, you know, is there any concern from CrossFit's standpoint, you know, if they've reached out to people on kind of preserving, especially some of maybe the more historic affiliates that have just been around for so long and having some kind of a relief?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I've heard, you know, so I know, like, I know CrossFit, the affiliates are the sort of lifeblood of CrossFit. I mean, it's like, you know, we want to keep the affiliates alive because the affiliates are on the ground floor doing, you know, the work of getting people healthier and fitter and you know, battling chronic disease and moving people forward and getting them off the couch. So we have to keep the affiliates alive. And so I know there's been like Zoom calls with affiliate owners, like from like different regions. I'm not sure how they organize that, but I've seen posts with like Coach Glassman and a bunch of people from HQ on Zoom calls with different affiliate owners. I don't know if they do that region by region or how they set that up. But so I know they're out there doing that. I've heard some petitions going around trying to get, you know, people to, you know, open up CrossFit gyms and small gyms as, you know, essential businesses to keep people healthy and safe in this time. Cause I think, you know, the CrossFit model does lend itself to adaptation, especially in times like this where you can, you know, make classes small and make them safe and not basically have everybody sharing like, you know, a leg press machine and lying face down on like dirty benches. You can,
yeah, at least give us the opportunity to try, you know, like to make it work like any other business.
Yeah, you can run a bunch of people, you know, in a warehouse space and keep them from cross-contaminating, and you know, CrossFitters are pretty good about coming in and, you know, wiping down their bars and putting stuff away. So I think, you know, we could generally make it a safe experience for the most part, like across the board. Like you can always, and because the program is up for grabs every day, like you can definitely program stuff that, you know, lends itself well to, you know, people not crossing each other's paths and sharing equipment. So
yeah, you can pre-stage things. You can still have an at-home option.
Yeah, so hopefully
they give us a chance.
Exactly. So hopefully, like, you know, as people get back to work, hopefully CrossFit gyms will be able to open again. And I know that's what everybody wants. I know everybody, you know, from the ground level, you know, from the members to the coaches to the owners to HQ, you know, everybody wants that to happen. So, you know, everybody's doing everything in their power to make that happen.
Yeah. Now, have you been teaching any of these online level ones?
No. Because those are mostly manned by a few flow masters, as far as I know. So there's as far as I understand it, there's the online seminar, which looks like a lot of the other online courses that most people are probably familiar with, just like the judges course. And the programming and the anatomy and the other courses. So there's lectures and little video quizzes, I think. And then there's like a webinar, like on a Zoom type of call with the people in like small groups, like eight or ten to a little thing with a coach. And they facilitate like the movement stuff. So you go through like squats and the coach coaches you guys on squats over Zoom. And I think there might be some Q&A and some other stuff. I don't really know, but it's my understanding that they're trying to adapt as much of the classic level one content and material and experience onto the platform as possible. So
yeah, so that'll be good, especially if people recertifying.
Anyone yeah, needs to do. For people who need to re-up their level ones and get their credits, it's a good option, I think. And from what I've heard, like people like it. You know, the lectures, the content is all gold. You know, it really hasn't changed over the years that much. And the experience, I think, well, the personal experience of this, you know, you don't get the you know, being in the room with somebody, but you get a lot of face contact with, you know, the coaches, and I think that's probably really good.
Yeah, maybe even more so than before with bigger groups.
Maybe, yeah. It could lend itself to being an even more personal sort of experience if you're up for creating dialogue on this platform. So I think that's probably a really good thing.
Are you noticing like a positive change in your health or just the way that you feel not having to travel as often to some of these things? So I know, for example, you know, I follow quite a few stand-up comedians, and a lot of them are saying, yeah, like, hey, I feel so much better not being on a plane all the time, just flying around the country to do all of these gigs. And you're kind of like that. You kind of live like the rock star lifestyle of like every weekend you're going to different places, you know, so I don't know if you feel any different.
No, I haven't really noticed it. I mean, my air travel has come down considerably the last couple of years. I mean, most of my gigs have been geographically, like, you know, much more in proximity to me. So I've been driving a lot more on weekends to seminars and not flying quite, not nearly as much as I was doing. Back when I was first on staff in like from 2010 to probably 2014, 2015, there was a lot of air travel, a lot of jet setting around, you know, not just in the States, but, you know, overseas for a lot of gigs. But now we have staff all over the world, and it's way easier to keep us a little more geographically located. So a lot less travel and just more driving. So I don't really notice that as much. I do notice just sort of the FOMO of not working on weekends.
Yeah.
You know, that's, you know, really hard, you know, 'cause it's a wonderful job, and it's, you know, you go, you know, it's a bummer to leave home, but you get to go and hang out with, you know, 50 like of the most diehard CrossFitters who are just eager to soak up the information, and it's always high energy and a blast, and I love that. So I miss that much.
Yeah, it's probably a little bit of an adjustment in the beginning on all of a sudden that first weekend or two you're home and you're like, this feels weird, like I shouldn't be here right now. I should be giving the What Is Fitness lecture.
Yeah. I mean, I've contemplated just putting on my red shirt and just like walking around and doing lectures.
Now leads me to my next question. Do you practice at all, like during this downtime? Like, okay, I haven't given the What Is Fitness lecture at all, you know, in a couple months. Do you like look in the mirror? Do you read it? Do you watch videos? Like, how do you keep your skills sharp right now? Or are you just kind of just going with the flow?
I'm going with the flow. I'm focusing on other stuff. I'm just trying to like work on getting my workouts in every day, and you know, doing some breathing and meditation work. And I'm coaching. We're doing like online. My jiu-jitsu school is doing a lot of online stuff. So I've got my 6 a.m. class, and we've been like going through all kinds of different stuff in terms of like breathing and mobility and like solo drilling, jiu-jitsu type stuff, and putting them through some like workouts as well. So I've been like just expanding my palette of being able to coach, you know, online over this platform, and also bringing back like some of my old like yoga stuff that kind of got rusty because I hadn't really been teaching or doing a lot of yoga stuff. But this is an excellent time and platform to focus on some of the more sort of mellow side of you know, training, working yeah. on the breathing, meditation, the stretching and mobility and all kinds of stuff like that. So
there's definitely a lot of coaches probably listening to this right now. What are some things that you do to lead an effective online class right now? Like what's kind of like your flow or your style? Like if this was a class right now, how are you going about doing it? You got like 10 people that come in, everyone's probably on mute, but like, what have you been doing?
Well, so I, you know, we're on week, what, 9 of this thing? So
yeah,
it's morphed over the last, you know, 9 weeks. I have a regular 6 a.m. class. And basically I missed like one day of teaching at 6 a.m. Like my last in-person class was like the Friday where they started locking everything down. And like two people showed up who were like eager, like one of the guys actually doesn't even train with me. He usually trains in the city. But he was like, oh, my work's shut down today. I'm stuck here. Are you still having class tomorrow? I was like, nobody told me to cancel yet, so I'm still having class. So he showed up. And this other dude who had just started coming to my class, he showed up. And then we shut everything down that Friday. Monday, I was like, I don't know what's going to happen. And then talked with my the studio owner, and he was like, we're going online. You know, start up at 6 a.m. Tell everybody to jump online with you at 6 a.m. and run a 6 a.m. class. I'm like, cool, doing it. And so for the first, like, I'd say actually about 6 weeks, I was really focused on just planning out my classes. Because I, the first week and a half, I didn't even have the Zoom Pro. Like, I just had, like, the basic Zoom, which is, like, 30 minutes.
Yeah.
I was like I got to make sure I don't, like, get cut off in mid-sentence. And like, you know, so I was, like, really just dialing in, like, okay, what are we going to do? Really had, like, a plan for every class. And then we upped the – got the pro account, we upped the classes to like 45 minutes, which is, I think, a good amount of time to be staring at a screen and trying to work out on your own with people. But I don't know, you know, it depends what you're doing. You could easily make these an hour. But the 45 minutes just seemed to be working well at the 6 a.m. time. And I, again, planning out what I wanted to do, I wanted to do some breath work, or building a little progression over like the course of, like, this week we're going to work on this, like, particular technique and breathing technique, and the next week we're going to work on this and this.
And you're doing all the programming?
Yeah. I'm just coming up with the plan for what I want to do with my 6 a.m. class and take them through a bunch of, you know, stuff, give them some tools to, like, you know, some breathing exercises, some, like, mobility and, like, stretching work to open up, you know, all the tight stuff. The stuff that I just see normally, and, you know, from teaching jujitsu and just working with bodies in general, you know, people are super tight in the shoulders and the hips, and they have all this, you know, stuff going on from sitting and driving. So, you know, really hammer down on some of the big, you know, the big money mobility stuff. Worked on a lot of, like, abs and core stuff, and, you know, so just started planning that out, like, really meticulously for like 6 weeks. And then it kind of just morphed into, like, I'm seeing the same faces, you know, like, what do you guys want to work on? And then people were like, hey, can we do more solo, like, jujitsu drills? Yeah. Okay. And then started adding some more of that stuff, and then sort of going more on a kind of by request, like, hey, you guys want to work on anything? Hey, you know, hey, can you show us this move or do this thing? Or my neck is killing me. Can we do some neck stuff? And so I've been doing a little more request-based classes the last couple weeks, which I don't recommend unless you're really good on your feet. Like, I taught yoga for almost a decade before I started teaching CrossFit, and then, you know, and spent a lot of, and, you know, when you open up a gym, you're like the only coach for
for forever,
from morning till night for, you know, a couple of years until you start hiring people. So, so I have, like, you know, a lot of hours under my belt and a lot of experience kind of winging it. So I'm totally comfortable in that situation, except, you know, occasionally it took me a little while to get my body clock used to the timeline. But now my, like, I kind of go and then I stop and look, I was like, yeah, okay. I figured I'm within like 2 or 3 minutes of where I thought I was.
It's good to kind of take those requests too. You got to keep everyone engaged right now and excited to come to those online classes. And even though they can still do it in home, it's still, you know, it's different. Like, they of course want to be at the gym and seeing everybody and using equipment, but right now they just gotta, we all gotta make it work.
Yeah, for sure. We gotta make it work. And, you know, and people come in every day to the, you know, that show up for my 6 a.m.s. I want to, like, you know, make sure that they're getting what they want, what they need, and mixing it up a little bit with, you know, some stuff that they're, that keeps them on their toes.
Are you doing any online CrossFit?
No, I haven't really been. I did a couple coaching sessions. I had a couple people reach out to me who were like, oh, you know, I want to work on this, work on that. I did a little bit of that, and like a little sort of mobility fix for somebody who was having some knee issues. And but I haven't done like any straight up like online CrossFit classes, which is kind of weird. You know, most of my, like, if you follow me, like, you see, like, every, like, once a week or so on Instagram, or I'll put up like a longer video of like me going over just some esoteric, you know, thing about a kettlebell or like a squat or a step up or something.
Yeah,
like
I've noticed that you've got a lot of great kettlebell workouts on your Instagram page, and I think one of them was like a 10-minute snatch test. Are you involved in competitive kettlebells at all? Like you're pretty deep in the kettlebells.
No, but like, you know, my like first two guys I like partnered up with at CrossFit NYC back in the day were both senior level RKCs, right? Court Wing, who was one of the owners at CrossFit NYC, was an RKC, and Mike Pomerening, who went on to start CrossFit Gotham, was a RKC. And then like, so like when we, you know, I had a couple kettlebells and those guys were my partners and workout buddies. So like I learned a good smattering of basic like RKC knowledge from them. And then Steve Cotter, who was another high level RKC, like came and did a couple seminars with us because those guys were in contact with Steve. And he was like, oh, we got to get this Steve Cotter to come to New York and do some seminars and workshops. So we had that. And then the next guy I learned from was Jeff Martone, who was again, like,
he's great.
Another high level RKC, and then started his own thing as well.
So, I had a chance to take a kettlebell cert with him, and yeah. He has the most unique way of explaining things that you can't stop listening and you're just totally transfixed and it makes perfect sense. And you're like, this is like, he's like a hidden genius. You're like there's something about him, you know, he's got this aura about him, Jeff Martone.
Yeah. I mean, Jeff is just a wealth of information. He's so brilliant. And he's so humble and unassuming and sort of soft-spoken. And you don't realize, like, he's dropping bombs left and right in terms of, like, knowledge and coaching and how to, I mean, his coaching stuff transcends, like, kettlebell stuff. If you listen to, like, you know, how he coaches and the way he organizes the information, he starts off sometimes with a little story and he goes off on a little tangent, but he brings it back and he like has like the format down.
It's like a slingshot. Like he'll just like arc around and you don't even realize it's coming back. And then it does. And you're like, oh my God, I know how to do this movement now. Like we were talking about like 30 years ago at this factory and something. And then all of a sudden we're back to the Turkish getup and I understand it now somehow. It's just, he's just got a phenomenal way of explaining things. What's something you've taken from what you've learned from some of these master kettlebell instructors that you apply to your own coaching or in CrossFit?
That's a great question. I mean, so just to take it where I was taking it before, like all the guys I just studied with were like senior RKCs who were like one step removed from like Pavel, right? Satsulin, who was like, you know, the godfather of kettlebells in the United States. So I picked up a lot of what I think are good habits and good, like basic technical stuff from those guys. So I'm pretty happy to have learned it right the first time type of thing. That's one of those things that Jeff Martone would say is like, you know, learn it right the first time and, you know, you're not going to have a problem. Learn it wrong and you're going to spend all your time trying to undo that and then learn it right. So that was some important stuff I learned. And then, Martone like understands like there's, you know, verbal learners or auditory learners, visual learners, tactile learners. And so anything he teaches, he usually, you know, explains it verbally, shows you how to do it, and then, you know, gets, you know, hands-on or finds a way to get you to feel it in your body. So he kind of attacks like everything he tries to teach in under those three ways so that like you're going to catch everybody eventually. You're going to catch the people who listen, the people who look, and the people who feel. And so that's a real important thing to think about when you're trying to teach and coach is to understand that like you can explain it all day, but like visual learners aren't going to get anywhere with that.
Yeah, I know myself. I can learn either way, but I learn the best if you're going to have me do it, and then watch me do it, and then give me feedback off of that.
Right. So it's important to make sure you're doing you know, attacking from all three fronts like that. So you get the best likelihood of success, and just, you know, the idea of repetition. And then the other thing is too, like, you know, like anything, like a lot of these guys like Martone started going into sport, right? The sport kettlebell stuff. So he was very much a hard style guy, did a lot of kettlebell juggling and flipping. And then basically where's he going, you know, went to the next level was like, he started competing in kettlebells and kettlebell sport. And then his style started changing and his teaching started changing as he started learning more about that. So, you know, I haven't seen Jeff Martone in a couple months, but like back in the day, the last couple times I hung out with him and stuff, he was starting to show me a lot of the sports stuff and how this was stylistically different and some of the stuff his coach was showing him. So that was kind of cool. So picking up more cool things about the kettlebell that way. But
In CrossFit, I know a lot of us refer to the different swings as your Russian swing and your American swing. Is that how they're universally known? Or I know there's a story behind why, you know, the American swing might be called the American swing. Is there anything to that?
My understanding is that, like, traditionally, like, you know, you with the Russians and like Pavel, you'd only swing it, you know, a kettlebell to your shoulders, because if you're going to go overhead, you were going to snatch it, right? So you're going to use one hand and you're going to snatch it. And kettlebells traditionally are a one-handed instrument, like a dumbbell, right? You normally don't do like two-handed swings that often, except maybe as like a warm-up or as a little assistance exercise to like just get the basic hinge mechanics. But then most of it turns into like one-arm swings and such. And all of that stuff is done, yeah, to shoulder height. And if you go overhead, it's a snatch. You're going to snatch or you're going to jerk. Right, you're not going to...
And that seems like a logical progression too. Okay, you've got to master the one-arm swing first, and then eventually you start progressing into more snatchy-type movements.
Right, yeah, exactly. So, and in sort of traditional kettlebell sport, the Russian swing is, or the kettlebell swing is an assistance exercise. It's not, the main lifts are the snatch and the clean and jerk, right, just like in Olympic weightlifting, and you have your assistance exercises, like, you know, your squats and your, you know, RDLs and stuff like that, and the kettlebell swing is just an assistance exercise, so it's not a contested move, so, like, they just use it to build some, you know, endurance and some mechanics and stuff like that. But when I think, you know, when CrossFit got a hold of the kettlebell, they were like, well, you know, we put it through a greater range of motion, we're going to do more work. We want to do more work in less time to have a higher power output. So let's go full range of motion and take it all the way overhead and bring it back down and do it really fast and for time. So
was there any pushback on that from the kettlebell peeps?
Oh yeah. There's, you know, everything CrossFit did, everybody had something to say about it and complain about it.
Right? Yeah. So does that mean that maybe, like, should we be teaching the one-arm swing a little more often than it's actually seen? Or is it good to stay grounded in the two-handed swing, particularly maybe Russian first and then progress eventually to American?
Well, it's all a matter of sort of what's your goal, what's your end state. In CrossFit, like, we want to increase work capacity, right? So we want to increase the load, increase the distance, decrease the time. Right, so you want to go through big range of motion fast, right? So American swing is the better for that, right? Like, you're gonna, you know, you do, you know, 30 kettlebell swings, you know, overhead American style versus 30 Russian style. The American style ones are just gonna wear you out that much more, right? Your lungs are burning that much more. They're much harder on the system, right? And really the time factor there over a set of 30 is, you know, not that much slower to go fully overhead, right? So if you have a race between 30 Russian swings and 30 American swings, the Russian swings will probably finish a little bit faster, but not so much given that you've doubled the range of motion, right? So you're going to get much more power output out of an American swing. But that being said, right, if you want to develop other qualities, one-arm swings are great because, you know, it's asymmetrical, like unilateral loading. There's a rotation involved through the torso that you have to combat. So it has a lot more to offer than just like work capacity. It has, you know, some other good like skills, you know, in terms of, you know, body movement and adaptations for core strength and stuff like that. And, you know, which all apply to other sports as well. Right. So it's not who's got the most power, but who can move, in all planes, you know, effectively, right? And so rotational movements and things like that definitely have a huge place in training athletes for other sports. So I definitely think you got to throw in some one arm swings and other unilateral exercises to get people balanced out and prepared for
things. Have a healthy dose of variety in there.
Yeah. And competing for things outside of just like CrossFit games and CrossFit competitions, you want to have, you know, people who are sort of were able to handle like, you know, racket and ball sports and other things like that.
Yeah. I know whenever it would pop up, you know, the kettlebell snatch is always like one of the trickier things to try to get a group of 10 to 20 people of varying fitness levels to all do, you know, and take them through a progression. Do you have any tips or tricks on teaching that movement in particular?
Yeah, and this is where, like, you know, the logic is there, right? If you teach people how to do a really good one-arm swing, it helps a lot with a kettlebell snatch. But most people have a really atrocious one-arm swing, which just leads to a more atrocious kettlebell snatch. So there's that.
So you got to really hone that in first.
Yeah. There's a lot of little details there. Like most of the stuff I've seen taught, there was like a hard style way of teaching it back in the day. So back in the early 2000s, there was like, you know, you'd swing, then you'd high pull, and then you'd kind of flip the bell over and catch it. And, you know, I'd seen that kind of disappear for a while. I hadn't seen anybody teach that kind of kettlebell snatch technique in a while. I thought it like had somehow died out. But then just recently now with everybody training from home and posting videos, like I saw a bunch of people teaching that kettlebell snatch.
Can you explain the difference real quick, hard style versus soft style?
So one of the easiest ways to think about it, right, is something called taming the arc. So initially what we saw, and there's some breathing stuff, there's a bunch of different stuff there, but initially what you'd see in a very basic level kettlebell swing is that the elbows are locked, you're hinging, and you're standing up, and you're coming back down, your elbows are locked, and it's very robotic looking.
Yeah, right? You have straight arms during the swing the whole time, pretty much.
Yeah, and you're like folding in half and standing up and snapping, right?
You're kind of like that desk toy. You know that desk toy that dips into the water back and forth? Yeah.
Yes, there's a hinging motion. Yes, you want to snap your hips. Yes, you want to do that. But what you'll see is a lot of the more experienced kettlebellers, a lot of sport guys, the elbows are a little softer. They have a little more engagement through the lat, not like having their arms hang out all the way out in front. You'll see with a one-arm swing that a lot of times at the top, people leave the arm that's holding on to the bell and that shoulder forward. So their body is kind of twisted at the top and the bell is kind of pulling them forward. So they're always turned a little bit to the side versus if they get a little soft elbow and they square their shoulders up at the top, it's a more natural and a more economical swing.
It's almost like the bell's pulling that shoulder out of the joint.
Exactly.
Forward, like you're reaching forward to grab something.
Exactly. And it looks very unnatural and not athletic. You kind of freeze frame them, right? You're like, what is that position? Where do we see that? Right? It looks like they like, you know, threw a punch and missed, right? And that's not what we want to teach people.
So don't do 21 of those in a row.
Right.
Miss punched.
Right. So basically, like, easiest way to kind of get your swing under control is to what we call tame the arc. So if you swing with your arms straight out, and the bell in front of you, like, and you kind of set up facing a wall, right? So the bell just misses the wall, and then take like one small step forward, like 1 foot length forward, and then try to swing and not hit the wall. You got to soften your elbows a little bit and keep the bell a little bit closer. Right.
That's pretty cool drill. I've never thought about doing that before. I wonder how many holes are in some walls out there. Exactly. That are practicing that one.
Maybe use an infinity ring instead of a wall.
Oh, okay.
Hey, Jeff, I'm
just trying to get the wood for me.
Oh, that's out in the garage, dude. We'll go get that in a minute.
Oh, it's in the garage.
Yeah.
That's way in the garage.
We just had a cameo there.
Yeah, a little cameo. That ability to tame the arc a little bit and keep the bell a little closer is going to make the trajectory up overhead much smoother, right? Because you don't have to, you know, pull the bell back in from 3 feet in front of you. You kind of keep it, just like 2 feet in front of you. And then the bell comes up a little bit smoother. And then because your elbow is a little soft as you're coming up overhead, right now you have the ability to extend the elbow and punch like up through the bell, right? But what most people teach is like a straight arm swing, then a pull, and then a pull and a punch. This is a little more subtle where your elbow is a little bit soft the whole way. The arc is a little closer to the body, and then a little easy elbow extension at the top. It becomes a much smoother kettlebell snatch than the pull and punch method where the bell flips over and whacks you in the forearm.
Yeah, and then you have a whole bruised wrist and back your forearm, and you need a special wrist wrap to do snatches and stuff like that.
Right. And it's like, it's weird. Like, I mean, I've been doing this for a while, and for a while, like, you know, if I was out of practice, I would still get those bruises on my wrists, especially after a weekend with Martone. I do stuff all the time, and then all of a sudden you spend a weekend doing like snatches and cleans with Martone, you know, for a seminar, like, you know, 8 hours a day, and suddenly you're just, your forearms and your hands are just like destroyed.
It's like you have like a glimpse into like training like a professional athlete for a little while. It's your full-time job to train kettlebells. It's the same thing for like weightlifting seminars. You go in and you just do reps upon reps upon reps, and then your lifting feels so much better. It's like, all right, well, maybe we should spend more time working with just the bar, or maybe lighter doing these drills for more time.
Oh, 100%, yeah. But it's been a while since I've had those wrist bruises. Maybe I'm not doing enough kettlebell snatches, but I think I've gotten things smoothed out a little bit, so I don't do that quite as much as I used to. Don't smash my forearms as much as I used to.
You're getting better technique.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope that's what that means.
Well, Keith, I'm so glad to have you on the show. It's been great talking to you. And I've got a couple last questions here. Someone who's been a member of the community for so long, you've been an affiliate owner, you're a level 4 coach, you know, you were there during the days before there were even affiliates, which I never even pondered that there was such a time. So it's now CrossFit's going back to its roots. Or seemingly, you know, everyone's doing simpler programming at home, very limited equipment. There's all this stuff going on. So as someone with all that experience, what's one piece of advice that you have for a box owner, one piece of advice for a coach, and one piece of advice for an athlete? And hopefully maybe they're different things. I don't know if they're different pieces of advice for those three different individuals, or maybe they're all on the same track.
So box owners, I mean, my heart goes out to all the affiliate owners during this time, because it's just, I know there's like bills mounting and you have no income. So, but hold on. The best thing you can do is just like, I know the people who are doing well are the people who have been reaching out to their, you know, membership base and staying in touch and just like, you know, and offering whatever they can, you know, not just fitness, just, you know, being there for their members and just reaching out to people. Because I know, you know, we're all, you know, sitting at home. We all have those dark days where we're just like, this is ridiculous, and we're banging our heads on the wall, and it feels like Groundhog's Day. It's just like repeating over and over. But you got to reach out to people and stay connected. Now more than ever, it's just important to, like, you know, let people know that you're out there thinking about them, and we're all in this, we're all feeling the same feels. So,
I like what you said there. Hang on. You know, yeah. I mean, I know a couple of affiliate owners and gym owners who are, I feel like, struggling with that right now. On just the hang on, like wait an extra week before you make a decision on what you're going to do with your business.
Yeah. And, you know, and that's the thing. It's like, I know, like, there's some people who, like, you know, I don't know what to do with people if I can't have them lift a heavy barbell. And you got to, like, step out of that and realize, like, you know, there's more to CrossFit, there's more to life than just heavy barbells. You know, be creative, figure out how to get your people fitter, you know, talk to them, you know, check in on like their nutrition, see if you can help them with their diet, see if you can help them get outside and get some sunshine, you know, give them ideas on workouts, you know, with less equipment. You know, it's not all just about like lifting barbells. I mean, we all love it. It's fun. It's you know, we want to clang and bang, but you know, we also need to, you know, keep our immune system healthy, keep, you know, reduce the metabolic derangement. We need to get out, get some vitamin D. So you know, just find ways to keep people involved and stay active and, you know, look at the big picture. We're here to be of service to people. That goes for owners and coaches, you know, be of service, go out there and figure out how you can help people. Cause I mean, a lot of people, you know, they're just sitting there, you know, binging on Netflix, which is great, but they need to get plugged back into the community, even if it's just online over a Zoom call, you know, sending them some texts and some stuff, knowing that you're doing stuff.
And they appreciate it when you reach out to them. I know I'm pretty regularly reaching out to the vast majority of our people, whether it be phone call, text, DM, and everyone's always pretty excited to get that message. It shows that you care. And then, you know, you see the next day or even that day, they're in the online class.
Yeah.
It's like everyone's going to need that little extra nudge. You know, I know myself being involved in the industry, and I know you yourself, you know, as coaches, we definitely have those days where we're like, I don't know if I want to work out today. Like yeah. And we don't necessarily have people nudging us. So now imagine your members who are just like, they're overworked. Cause I know a lot of people, even though they're working at home, they're working way more than they were before. Like they're doing all this extra overtime and stuff.
And they got to they got to school their kids and they got to cook all their meals and do all this stuff.
Yeah. So they need a nudge.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's just, I mean, all of us want to get back to, you know, back to lives as we knew it. But, you know, right now it's just important to, you know, stay on top of our, doing what we can, you know, controlling what we can control, right? We can control our sleep. We can control what we eat. We can still, you know, control like the amount of exercise we're getting. Maybe more so than we could before, right? So look at that as the silver lining. It's like, you know, I really can, like, I'm now cooking like, you know, as opposed to cooking like 50% of my meals, now I'm cooking like 90% of my meals.
Yeah.
So like, I really, you know, have no excuse to like, you know, eat like shit at this point. Right. Yeah. I mean, like, there's a lot of good reasons to eat like shit.
Yeah. Hey, you got to support that local ice cream shop down the road.
Exactly.
I mean, the mom and pa's out there, they need your help, Keith.
I know. But now more than ever, like, I really have, like, you know, perfect control over what I'm sticking in my body. So if, you know, if I didn't have the time to weigh and measure before, I certainly have the time to weigh and measure now. If I didn't have the, you know, time to cook a healthy meal, I certainly have the time now. So however deep down the nutrition rabbit hole you want to go, take a little time to clean that up. You know, I was like everybody else. I was like eating my way through everything and drinking my way through everything for like good 3 or 4 weeks. And then like, I've slowly curtailed all that down to like no drinking and no carbs like this last week, and like cleaned it up a little bit. Cause I'm like,
yeah, you only got to see your own image back on the Zoom call while you're demoing something and be like, whoa, putting on some weight there.
Yeah. I was like, at some point I'm going to like be running around outside without a shirt on. I need to, you know, tighten things up a little bit.
Yeah. Or even, you know, at some point, you know, the level ones are going to come back. You're going to be traveling, you know, you're going to be seeing people, and you don't want to be showing up and having people like, is that Keith?
Yeah.
Exactly. He's put on 50 pounds. Is he all right? You know,
but I mean, you know, even less, you know, for vanity, I mean, the data is strong that, like, man, this stuff, this COVID-19 is hitting people way harder who already have comorbidities and, you know, metabolic problems and other, you know, diseases and stuff, like the people with obesity and diabetes and heart disease and all that stuff are getting hit way harder by this disease than anybody else. So if you can do yourself a favor and, like, you know, get off the sugar and clean up your metabolism a little bit and, you know, not eat a lot of processed junk food, you're gonna be a lot stronger and better for it.
Yeah, that'll help a lot for sure. So I love that advice for box owners. You know, hang on, reach out to people, see what they need, be of service. How about for a coach? You know, someone who's not the box owner, maybe they're not even coaching anymore right now because the box is shut down and maybe the gym owner or the head coaches are taking over those Zoom classes and you're kind of just left being someone who would like to coach eventually again in the future. What's something that you can do to keep improving right now?
I mean, there's so much to do. I mean, one, you know, working on your own fitness, you know, whatever your weaknesses are. Like if you're a great barbell coach and you suck at gymnastics, maybe now's the time to walk on your hands a little bit, or vice versa. This is a great time. You have the time to, like, you know, take an online course, you know, read a few more books on, you know, training, right? Go dig through, you know, the West Side Book of Methods or, you know, something that, like, was seemingly, like, you know, daunting before, but this might be the perfect time to dig into something like that.
So you're saying instead of watching the Tiger King, watch or take the CrossFit online dumbbell course and learn
right.
A thing
or two. You know, you got time to do both, right? I managed to do both of those during the quarantine. but yeah, I mean, there's tons of resources out there for coaching, and there's tons of good books written on coaching. So, you know, up the educational aspect of it, up your own training a little bit. You know, even if you just, you know, have one or two clients, you know, dig a little deeper into helping your clients out. You know, work on your online coaching skills. Yeah, you can still improve your coaching a lot by just studying and working out.
Seems like now for, like, especially like you said before, maybe like the coach who's really good at barbell stuff, but they're lacking in their gymnastics coaching skills. Maybe, you know, you put it out there to your local community. Hey, I want to do a little workshop on a Saturday, you know, for 10 people, whoever wants to come. And I want to practice my coaching for some gymnastic skills and I need some people to coach. Just
yeah.
Put it out there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's lots of ways to get, you know, creative about it. My creativity lately, I mean, I know I've put out a couple, like, you know, more fitness related things on IG, but I've been digging into, like, trying to figure out how to recreate, like, certain, like, jujitsu things here, props to use to, you know, like, I have a grappling dummy, but, like, I know not everybody has a grappling dummy, and I'm like, well, what else can they use to, you know, recreate, you know, some grappling experiences while using some stuff around the house, so.
Maybe a pillow.
Yeah, exactly. So I've been, like, sitting here, like, choking my foam roller and, you know, punching my ab mat and doing all kinds of stuff to figure out how to put something, you know, come up with some, you know, ideas and fun little things to do. And just, like, try to do that crossover between, like, what exercises could I do for my jiu-jitsu folks to help them, you know, get a little better. And I know they don't want to do burpees, but I know burpees will help them, you know, on the mat.
Yeah, no one ever wants to do burpees, but it's a necessary evil. You just maybe think of something that we used to do a lot back in the day at Albany CrossFit is maybe film a video.
Yeah.
Like a little instructional video. Like if you're someone who's not good at coaching something, it's like, okay, well, if you're going to film a video and the camera's going to be on you, I bet you'll study it and put in the time to learn it and demo it and do multiple takes. That's one thing that Jason used to have us do a lot back in the day was we were doing so many videos. So of course you had to, like, do a research project, like, all right, so I don't sound like a fool when I go to speak and talk about this exercise or this technique.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Like, this is a great opportunity for coaches. Like, even if, like, nobody watches your video, like go put out a decent, like, you know, 3 minute, 5 minute tutorial on anything.
Like, yeah. Just, and you make a great point. No one's going to watch your video. Like more than likely, right? Like, I know when I used to make those videos, like, it used to be like the weight of the world is on you. You're like, oh my God, a million people are going to watch this thing. I'm going to stutter. I'm going to say a wrong word. And then you go back and look at the views and it's like, no one watched it. You know, like the people who needed to watch it, watched it, which are your members at your gym, you know, and the 10 of them that wanted to see you talk about this thing.
Here's the thing too. Like, if you really want to be a coach, if you really want to do anything, you have to want to do it, even though nobody's watching and, you know, and you're not getting paid for it. Right. So, like, I have a buddy who's a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. I was training with him like 20 years ago, back when I started doing Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And he's got his own academy out in California. And, like, there's nobody there right now, but he's in there with his buddy, like, and shooting a Facebook Live video that I just happened to catch last night. And I'm looking at, like, the little tells you how many people are online watching it. It was like 3, 2, and then just me. And I'm like, this guy is like a phenomenal black belt, and he's like just showing like cool moves for like half an hour on his buddy, just like giving like a little clinic. And I'm like, this is gold, and like nobody's watching it. But he, you know, I know it's cathartic for him to like get on there and just like get on the mat with his friend and like show stuff, because he hasn't been able to do it for 8 weeks. And
yeah,
and eventually that video, you know, someone will watch it, or they won't, but like, you know, for him, it's, I know it's a great release, and like, I'm getting benefit out of it. And yeah, you just got to put some stuff out there just because you want to do it. And it's going to feel good.
Because you love it. And if you help one person, that's a lot right there. Like, one person is huge, you know, and then anything else after that is like almost bonus. It's like, okay, I helped five additional people, you know, came and watched the video. But if you helped one person, that's one person that never would have gotten that help that probably needed it the most if you decided to, you know, keep watching Netflix or just not do it because you're self-conscious about doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Well, what about the athlete? There's so many athletes out there right now who are going through vastly different experiences, because we have some athletes who have no equipment. We have other athletes who bought all the equipment Rogue had to offer back at the beginning of March and have full home gyms now. So like, what's one piece of advice to all the athletes during this time, or it could even be just in general?
I think, you know, not knowing exactly when we're going to come out the tunnel and come out on the other side, but, you know, I don't want to come out of this, and I don't want anybody who has the choice to come out of this to come out of this not having learned something new or gotten a little bit better at something, you know, that they sucked at going into this. You have the time on your hands. It's one of those weird sort of situations where, like, God, if I only had the time to do X, right? And we say that to ourselves all the time, and now we have that time. Most likely, most of us are squandering it. I know I'm probably squandering more of it than I care. But that's, you know, I wake up, I'm like, okay, you know, they could let me back out on the streets tomorrow, and I have not written my novel yet, right? I have not written the Great American Novel yet. I better get back to work.
Yeah.
Start writing.
Or it could be, you know, you didn't have double unders before. The open keeps popping up and you never have double unders.
Yeah.
And now you got all this time and you got that jump rope there. And you just need to spend a couple minutes a day working with it. Now's the time to get double unders or whatever skill was kind of eluding you.
Exactly. So yeah, whether it's, you know, a physical thing, like, you know, double unders or working on your mobility or, you know, working on your muscle ups or something like that. Or it's, you know, hey, I've been meaning to read that book, you know, hey, I've been meaning to learn that language, right? Or, you know, it's your nutrition or whatever it is, like, take on the mindset that you want to, you know, do something new, learn something new, come out of this thing a little bit better than when you went into it.
Definitely. I think that's all we can all do during this time. Well, thank you so much, Keith. It's been great talking to you. Hopefully get you back on again and talk more about CrossFit and kettlebell and other things, especially after the quarantine, what new adventures you'll be on at that point.
Yeah, I can't wait.
What where can people follow you?
Follow me at Coach Panda on Instagram. And I don't know, you can look me up on Facebook, I guess. I don't really use the Twitter that much.
Do you still have your blog?
Oh yeah, forcedistancetime.com.
Now, there is a website to read for any coaches out there looking to learn a thing or two. Check out Keith's website. That would be an incredible resource.
I wish it was. I mean, there are probably some little gems in there. It's mostly just me like offloading like a bunch of stuff that's rattling in my brain. There was times where I was a little bit more, put a little more work into blog posts and try to, attach like cool pics and videos to them and stuff. So there's some good stuff in there. And then there's stuff that's totally unformatted and just like stuck up there needing to write something and put it out. Forcedistancetime.com. There's ramblings about training and jujitsu and mobility and breathing and all kinds of stuff on there. So
great, great stuff to learn about. Well, thank you again. And for those listening, make sure you follow The Barbell Strikes Back on Instagram. Follow me if you'd like, James A. McDermott. And be sure to go onto Apple Podcasts and leave a positive review. Give a 5-star rating if you think deserve it. And we'll see you again soon. Thank you so much for listening.
Thanks.